plans for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am joined by the Falcoholic himself, Dave Choate, and we are recapping the Falcons' Week 7 loss to the New England Patriots.
You are locked on Falcons. Your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Well, Dave, welcome back to the show. Last time you were on recapping a game, it happened to be after the Super Bowl. That time we asked you earlier that week to come on because we were very optimistic going into that week that, you know, the Falcons would finally come away with the Super Bowl that you and I have been long awaiting for and sort of have had to do whatever, and that did not come to fruition, and now you get two opportunities. That was sort of the most Falcon way that you could lose a Super Bowl, and then now talking about this Patriots loss that I think a lot of people expected the Falcons to come out and play much better than they did, you know, deja vu all over again. So I apologize in advance, I guess, Dave, for that, forcing you into that position.
Yeah, I think, you know, let's just not plan to talk after the Falcons play the Patriots ever again.
But, you know, I think it's good to have you on because you are, you know, I always say this when you come on, but you are in a habit of talking people off the ledge. You have been running the Falcoholic for 11 years. You guys just celebrated your 11th birthday. And in that time when you, I know I can speak for myself, but when you run a Falcons website with a, you know, small community in my case, but a large community in your case, you spend a lot of time talking people off of ledges, and so you've gotten really good at it. So maybe, just maybe, you can talk people a little bit off the ledge today, but I'm sure you have some, maybe you also want to spew some fire and brimstone. That would be a welcome change, I guess, as well, if someone other than myself spew some negativity. So let's get into the game. What were your thoughts watching the Falcons sort of get embarrassed on Sunday Night Football last night?
I guess I would start with impotent rage. I was so very angry after the first quarter. So, and even during the first quarter, like, you know, it felt like things were on the verge of going off the rails. And, you know, the secret to my success, I guess, in terms of talking people off the ledge is that I get mad and then I see people get way angrier than me and I'm not quite that angry. So I guess I've staked out a position, but yeah, you know, I was very angry. And then by the end of the game, I was sort of resigned to the fact that they were going to lose again in extremely embarrassing fashion. I was going to be dealing with Patriots fans all week again. And, you know, my thought process, I guess, was, you know, what is it going to take to fix this? Because, you know, we both know that they're not firing Steve Sarkisian right now. And, you know, there's not going to be a wholesale turnover of the roster in week 7. And knowing that, you know, it's just a matter of saying this has to be rock bottom. And so that cheered me up a little bit to think that maybe this is as bad as it's going to get. Only so much, though, because, you know, every drive I kept a little bit of hope alive that Matt Bryant wasn't going to hit the uprights or they were going to find a way to score a touchdown. And really, you know, until the very end in basically garbage time, they just couldn't do that. So it was just a sad, infuriating game all the way around. And, you know, I guess that clinging to my sanity is the only way I got through it.
Yeah. You know, we've seen 6 quarters of pretty bad football from the Falcons recently. And that's sort of overshadowed from, you could probably cherry pick 6 quarters over the first, you know, month of the season of pretty good football from the Falcons. Unfortunately, it wasn't sort of consecutive, but I'm wondering from your perspective, do you feel like looking at this team and sort of the way it's played since halftime of that Dolphins game, and you're seeing a lot of issues on this team? You're seeing breakdowns in offense, obviously. Or you're seeing breakdowns on defense. You see now even seeing breakdowns on special teams. I don't know what's happening with Matt Bosher. For some reason, he can't punt the ball anymore. And all of a sudden, our money field goal kicker is missing pretty easy chip shots. So it's one of those things where, like, I feel like this team needs to find something it does well and build off of that if they're going to fix this problem. Do you feel like there's one thing that maybe this team could potentially hang their hat on and sort of get things back on track? It's like, okay, this is going to be our core identity, whether it's throwing the ball to Julio Jones, whether it's running the ball to Devontae Freeman, or whatever it is. Is there something out there that you feel like, okay, if they can start to do this one thing well, they can build off of this and maybe we can get this thing turned around offensively or defensively?
I think offensively for me, the answer is, you know, get the ball in the hands of your playmakers and don't do it in a way that suggests that you are driving a Lamborghini to the McDonald's 2 minutes away from your home, and that's as far as you're willing to take it. Because you're afraid you're going to get dented or scratched or whatever. I really can't figure out why the Falcons are settling for easy chunk yardage and not putting guys in a position to break big plays. You know, one of the things that I think we saw a year ago was that not only was Matt Ryan throwing a better deep ball and so forth, but, you know, they were finding ways to get Taylor Gabriel, to get Tevin Coleman, to get Julio Jones into space where they can operate and be dangerous. And we've hardly seen the ball go to Tevin Coleman through the air. We've really seen, I think, Taylor Gabriel used ineffectively. And even Julio Jones, you know, these are throws that you're making them and you know right away that he's going to have three guys on him trying to bring him down, as we repeatedly saw against the Patriots. So I think that what this team has to do to really start being explosive, to start scoring points and start looking like the offense they were a year ago, is to figure out how to get those guys, you know, a little room to breathe and not just settle for the 8 yard outs or, you know, the carry up the middle in Tevin Coleman's case. I just think that it's a little bit more creativity and it's a little bit more willingness maybe to take some risks that they're not taking right now. And I really think that that's going to be the way you get back on track, because you can feed Julio all day long if you want to. But if, you know, you're just connecting over the middle for, you know, 10 to 12 yards at a time and taking the risk that comes with targeting Julio, who's always under double coverage and so forth, that's really not the way to go. So, you know, I don't know exactly how you're going to do that. I guess that's up to Steve Sarkisian, but I think that has to be the difference. I think the defense is at least good enough, despite its lapses, to keep them in games if they could just start scoring some points.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I was looking at the numbers, and, you know, at this point through six games last year, the Falcons had 33, I think, big plays of 20-plus yards on 28 different drives. This year they have 21 such big plays on 19 drives, and you looked at 9-drive difference. That amounts to about 44 points over the course of six games. And, you know, a touchdown more, if you spread that evenly throughout these six games, a touchdown more and this team will probably be 5-1 and have some, you know, some blowout wins and some pretty tight wins against teams like Buffalo and Miami that have pretty good defenses. And so we're having a much different sort of conversation right now about, you know, maybe we're talking about this Patriots game being the first loss of the season and whatnot, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, this team is still really good and well on track, and they had a hiccup against the Patriots. And I think really the explosiveness is sort of what they're missing on offense. I think you mentioned it. I think looking at the big plays they've gotten the last 3 weeks, in particular in their losses, they've had 9 such big plays, but it's interesting to me to notice that 5 of them have been run plays and only 4 of them have been pass plays. And you look at them and it's like 2 of them are Tevin Coleman passes against the Lions, or no, that's even including the Lions game. One of them is a Tevin Coleman pass the last 3 weeks, and 2 of them are Justin Hardy plays, and 1 of them is that screen pass to Taylor Gabriel. And you're not seeing the big plays from the tight end position. You're not seeing them from Julio Jones. And I see a lot of people talking about, oh, they need to get Julio Jones the ball more. I don't think they need to get Julio the ball more. I think he's, you know, getting the ball just enough. I think it's how they get him. And the difference between Julio last year and what made him effective, because last year I think he had 50 targets in the first 6 weeks. This year he has 50 targets in the first 6 weeks. But the difference is those 50 targets last year, a lot of them were primarily down the field, and they were big plays down the field. And the Falcons could play that way and use Julio primarily as a deep threat and not sort of the guy that they facilitate their offense through, is because they could get big plays from other players. And it forced teams to have to sort of try to defend the entire field, because I mean, it's like, okay, if you focus too much on Julio, well, guess what? We're going to run this sort of, you know, the tight end's going to leak out and Toy Lolo and Hooper and these guys going to get big plays down the sideline or on coverage bus because teams completely forgot about it because the safety is seeing Julio make that crossing pattern. He knows that's the play that the Falcons love to run. And he's biting on that and leaving the tight end wide open. Or he knows that Devontae Freeman is gashing them and he's keying on the run action in the backfield. And so he's leaving that tight end open. And obviously Taylor Gabriel's only big play is on the screen pass, which is, you know, a testament to Taylor Gabriel, but that's not necessarily how you want to use him. And so I think that's really sort of where this offense is failing. They're not able to dial up explosive plays in the passing game. They're relying on their running game to do it. And, you know, fortunately, their running game has helped them in that regard. And I do think, you know, going back to basics a little bit and running the football and using the play action and building off of that to sort of get those big plays, it may be vanilla, it may be predictable in a lot of ways, but it's something. That is something that this team, I think, has been doing pretty effectively this year. And I think you can build off of that and sort of get this offense back on track if you have that strength. I don't think they're going to be the team that they were last year offensively. I think that ship has sailed. I think last year's offense was operating at such an elite level that I think, you know, we sort of duped ourselves into thinking, oh, it was the talent and whatnot. And I think that's clearly not been the case. Because we have the same talent and it's not operating at that same level. And, you know, I guess that leads me to my next question with you, Dave, and sort of what are your thoughts on the play calling, which is basically what I've seen the majority of people talking about. And now you've reached the point where you heard a couple of trickles after the Dolphin game of Fire Sark, but now it's sort of more of a deluge now that people are like, you know, you got people in the national media saying that the Falcons need to make a move immediately and whatnot. So what are you already mentioned that, you know, that's not really realistic, but what are your thoughts on the play calling and do you have a ton of hope that things are going to get better with more time?
You know, I do think it'll get better with time. And I think that, you know, we all sort of acknowledged with Steve Sarkisian that he was coming into this year, you know, as a first time NFL play caller, and certainly there was some risk with that, but I think that, as you said, we had all convinced ourselves that the talent alone was enough, to the point that I distinctly remember in June and July and even August saying, you know, we'll probably regress and be a top 10 or, you know, top 5 offense instead of the number 1 offense in the league, and people really did take offense to that. And I think the thought process there was, with this much talent, it's just easy to call a game like this. But I think that what we're seeing is that Sarkisian has a particular idea of how things should be working, and clearly they're not working at this point. And I think that Dan Quinn realizes that, and, you know, he's not the man to override Sark on that side of the ball, or anything like that. But I do think there's going to be additional pressure on Sark to find something that works. And I think that that will eventually lead to better results. I do think that he is learning. I think he has to learn. I think there were a handful of plays against the Patriots that I thought were really smart and worked well. I think he's called a couple of decent games this year, against Chicago, which has a very tough defense, and against Green Bay, where he just, you know, preyed on an opponent's weaknesses. So I think that if the pressure isn't going to get to him too much, I think some kind of improvement is inevitable. The talent is still there. And I think what it's going to look like, as you alluded to, is just, you know, more play action. I think smarter use of some of the playmakers they do have, and a little bit more willingness to, you know, say, we're going to take some shots. We're going to do some unorthodox things. They're not always going to work, but we're not just going to settle. We're not going to go, you know, short on third down, because the Atlanta Falcons don't need to be, you know, insert terrible offense here and do that, you know, and be timid. So I think that there's inevitably going to be some kind of improvement. The question is going to be, is it going to come early enough in this year to sort of salvage the season, or is it going to come in 2018, sort of a la Kyle Shanahan, who, you know, outside of a good stretch or two in his first year, really had a lot of trouble as a longtime offensive coordinator getting the most out of this group of guys. And I do think that it is a different situation, but we do need to be cognizant of the fact that, yeah, this is going to take some time, and clearly we're not as far along or as, you know, offensively adept as we thought we'd be.
All right, guys, there's more to explore about this Falcons loss to the Patriots, but I do want to remind folks that you can check out a whole host of NFL and NBA shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, wherever podcasts are found.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group, just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost the sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
People have talked quite a bit about sort of the struggles that the offense went through in 2015. I've talked about that a bit on this podcast as well. And you go back and you look at that 2015 season, and maybe, you know, the fog of war to a certain extent has sort of obscured the perception in a little bit. But I just remember about that 2015 team, that when Julio Jones wasn't doing Julio Jones things, they weren't very effective offensively. It was like when you looked at Matt Ryan's passer rating when he was throwing at Julio Jones versus what he was when he was throwing at other people, there was a big drop off. And I think that's sort of coloring some of the issues this year. I don't think it's quite as big a drop off this year as it has been in past years, but it does seem like unless Matt Ryan is throwing the Julio Jones, it's not really clicking for this offense. And particularly going back to the point I made previously with the explosiveness, where like you're just not getting other players involved. You know, people have complained quite a bit, and I think rightly so, with sort of not getting Tevin Coleman involved as much in the passing game against some defenses that you felt most people felt confident that they could, you know, exploit, because they don't have the world's fastest linebackers and whatnot. And, you know, Hooper's been productive at times, but outside of, you know, a couple of coverage busts against the Bears, you're not really seeing him being this big weapon. And again, I've talked about Gabriel. Basically, it seems like the offense is, if it's not a screen pass to Taylor Gabriel, they don't really know what to do with him. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see sort of where they can go from here. And I guess my concern is all the talk that's been recently with, oh, let's get Julio Jones more red zone targets, and some of the talk where like we need to get the ball in the Julio's hands. I feel my concern is, while like that's not a bad thing, my concern is they will just fall right back into the trap that they were in 2015, where it's like they're just solely relying on Julio Jones to have to basically drive the bus and pump the gas and change the tires and do everything in this offense. And I don't think that's really going to help them get significantly better, because I think that then sort of makes them a little bit easier to defend. And I think, you know, we talked about this quite a bit last year, which was the secret to their success was even in the games where Julio Jones had, you know, what was it, that Saints game, I think he had like one catch for 16 yards or something like that. They still were able to put up, you know, like what, 40 points against the Saints or whatever. And it's like when you make the secret to Shanahan's success was his ability to force teams to have to defend the entire field and not just one guy, which you can somewhat effectively limit if you just bracket him with safety help and whatnot. And if Matt Ryan is reverting back because he's not as comfortable, and I think that was one of the issues in 2015, which was Julio was the only receiver that he was really comfortable with, because, you know, Roddy White fell off of a cliff and they brought him all these new weapons and Tammy and Nick Williams and all these other, and Justin Hardy. in Leonard Hankerson that he wasn't comfortable with. And then, you know, they brought those same, you know, they brought in a number of new weapons in 2016, but he was quickly able to get comfortable with those guys because he understood the scheme better and he understood what they were asking him to do. And it feels like, from my perspective, with Matt Ryan's, some of his struggles this year, it looks a lot similar to sort of the 2015 Matt Ryan, who's not clearly as comfortable with what the play calls are and what the play caller is asking him, and you don't have that same sort of synergy that we saw in 2016. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on sort of Matt Ryan's performance these last couple of weeks, where he's drawn a little bit more criticism, particularly in comparison to what we saw last year, where he was an MVP candidate and was sort of above reproach?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is sort of, it is comfort, and I think that's a good word for Matt Ryan's weakness, I guess, as a quarterback, is that, you know, he when he is not comfortable, he shows it in his play on the field, and I think that he is not comfortable right now and is definitely showing. You know, he's got those overthrows deep, particularly in the end zone, which is a little bit disconcerting. And certainly in 2015, he just seemed off on his timing. He was making poor reads. And I think that is always going to be part of who Matt Ryan is. Certainly he's far enough into his career now, nearly a decade or a decade, that we know who he is. And I think that that's part of the problem with changing offensive coordinators and changing around the staff, is that, you know, Ryan has his comfort zone and his comfort level, and you really have to, you know, and this is true of a lot of quarterbacks. I don't want to make this seem like a giant criticism of him, but you have to build the offense to make him comfortable and give him the kinds of throws that he wants to make. And I think that we've seen that this year, and it's been a little bit sobering. Certainly, even for somebody like me, who knew that Shanahan was a big part of Ryan's success, but thought that, you know, the leap forward that he had taken there was sustainable because he had learned so much and worked on so much under Shanahan. You know, clearly there is some regression going on here that's independent of all the other struggles the offense is having. And I think that that just means that you have to figure out a way to make sure that Ryan is comfortable throwing the football to guys like Austin Hooper, to Tevin Coleman, to Julio Jones, to Taylor Gabriel, on the kinds of plays, again, that are going to break big gains and do things for you. I think that right now he seems most comfortable, besides throwing to Julio, throwing to Mohamed Sanu. And, you know, Sanu is a hyper-reliable target. I've been really impressed with how reliable he's been. But again, that's chunk yardage that you're getting with Sanu. He excels at getting open and making that quick catch, and he doesn't do a ton after the catch necessarily with it. And so that's the kind of pass that Ryan shouldn't be making 10 or a dozen times a game if this offense really wants to be explosive. And I think it's incumbent on Sarkisian in part, but also Matt Ryan, to figure out, you know, what is the comfort level you need to have with enough time in the pocket, which I really do think he's had for the most part, to make the kind of throws you made a year ago.
I'm curious, Dave, what are some other issues that concern you about the offense, you know, besides, you know, whether it's the quarterback play or the play calling? Are there other issues that concern you about this team on either side of the ball? But beyond those things, or are there some things that you look at and you're like, this is something that the Falcons do really well? And even though, you know, this is a rain of negativity, a storm of negativity, there are some positives that I saw in that Patriots game that I would like to see the team continue to build off of.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we're talking about concerns just outside of the, you know, Matt Ryan, the passing game, Steve Sarkisian, offensively, it's really the way they've used their running backs. And it's not so much through the air as it is, you know, I think they'll run the football, but it tends to be for Devonta Freeman, you know, they use the toss crack quite a bit against the Patriots, and it worked fairly well, but it was either that or going up the middle. And after a while, I'd like to see them mix things up. And I think that, even though Coleman still is not the most balanced runner in the world, I think you want to get him a little bit more involved. And I think if you can increase the carry count for both of your backs, you're probably going to see more success there. Clearly, the last couple of weeks, they haven't had the chance to establish the run the way they wanted to. And I think that's been, you know, somewhat reflected in the final results. Defensively, you know, I have seen this defense take some strides. I really do think that. I think the pass rush has been a little bit better. I think that they've held some decent offenses in check by and large, especially given the position the offense is putting them in. But I think the execution and the mistakes are what's bothering me right now. You know, you've had multiple interceptions at this point and multiple stops erased by penalties or just poor tackling or the wrong decision. And I think that, you know, when you hear Devondre Campbell and Deion Jones and Ricardo Allen in subsequent weeks talking about how they didn't see anything that wasn't drawn up from an opposing offense and they just couldn't make those plays, I think that tells you how close they are, which is encouraging, but it's also deeply frustrating to know that the difference, you know, between a win or at least a much better showing defensively has been the plays like that are just these little gimme things that are going wrong.
Yeah, I think with the defense, I think you're right. They certainly have made strides. I think when you look, you know, if you looked at several metrics, third down defense, red zone defense, points allowed and whatnot, you would look at this defense and say, yeah, they've made significant strides. They rank pretty highly in a lot of those categories. And, you know, it's interesting because, like, I think they're like 12th or 13th in scoring defense, and I think they're top 10 in total defense in terms of yards allowed. And that looks like, we have a really good defense. But, you know, one of the stats I found interesting is how teams are being able to successfully shorten the game against the Falcons. And you go back the last 3 weeks, the Falcons have had 27 possessions, 26 if you want to throw out that 22nd possession at the end of the first half against the Patriots. And on average in the NFL, you know, per game, you're going to have between 10.5 to 11.5 possessions per game. And so essentially, over a three-game span, you would expect the Falcons to have to up to, you know, 34, 35 possessions. And so teams' ability to shorten the game, I think, has allowed them to take away, you know, up to 8 or 9 possessions away from the Falcons' offense. And even though we know the Falcons' offense is struggling to score points, I do think defensive coordinators and opposing teams are approaching it well. It's like, well, if we give them, you know, 10, 11, or 12 opportunities to score, eventually with their talent level, they will have those, you know, they will take advantage of that. And it's better for us to limit those opportunities. And I think the issue with the defense has been, you know, they haven't been able to get those stops. You look at the Patriots game and you look at the first 25 minutes with the first, you know, 3 or 4 possessions of the game, and the Patriots were able to control the ball for 17 of those 25 minutes. We've talked a bit, and the stats have been glaring with the time of possession in the second halves of these games. But it was like the Patriots came out and said, okay, we won't need to wait to the third or fourth quarter to control the clock. We're going to start right away. And I think where the defense is struggling in terms of where it's not quite to the level where it needs to be is that they're not quite good enough to win these sorts of games where the Falcons are struggling, you know, not having as many possessions per game. They're certainly not taking advantage of those few possessions. Like, you know, they're dead last in the league in terms of the number of drives per game this season, but they were 27th last year. But the difference was they were able to score at such an exceptionally high level on limited opportunities when teams were trying to shorten the game. It didn't really matter all that much, and they're obviously having struggles against that. And so where the defense has made improvements in a lot of areas, and I think certainly the arrow was pointing up from a sort of long-term standpoint when you look at where they were at the beginning of 2015 when Dan Quinn came into town, they still haven't quite reached that level where we can win these sorts of games. And unless, you know, unless this offense can get back on track where we're just going to have to outscore opponents, or this defense can make a big jump moving forward, it's going to continue to be sort of this up and down process, I think, this season. Do you feel comfortable that the defense still has something left in the tank? I mean, it sounds like you do. You feel like there's still a lot of room for improvement with this defense for the rest of the season. Do you feel like we can start winning some of these games if we only are held to, you know, 20 points offensively, do you feel like we can start winning games 20-17, or we might still be a year away from that?
I really do feel like they can do that. I feel like they can win games that are tight and are fairly low scoring. I think if you're asking your defense to cover for, you know, 7 points or 17 points, they have to be an elite unit, and we're clearly not looking at an elite unit at this point. But I do think that this Falcons defense is good. It's not that far away from being an excellent defense, and I think that this is what Dan Quinn has been building toward this whole time, you know, that he really is a defensive head coach. That's where his passion is. And so I look at this defense and I think that they've made the kinds of strides I've been looking for. And I think that the frustration for me is that they are so close to really shutting down these teams, but it is the errors and the mistakes and the mental discipline. And I think that the question for me is, can you get out of your own head and stop making those mistakes? And I think that I'd like to believe that this defense can do that. I think they have the composition to do it, both mentally and physically. So I think that those kinds of games are going to come up. They could come up as soon as this weekend against the Jets. And I think that the defense is good enough, absolutely, to win those for the Falcons if they can just start, you know, pulling down those turnovers without penalties, not letting those balls bounce out of their hands, getting a couple of lucky breaks on fumbles, which they haven't this year. And avoiding, you know, those little costly mistakes, again, that have really defined the defense this year in a way that is probably not entirely fair, given how well they've played otherwise.
Fair enough. Dave, we did not get the opportunity to talk on this podcast about this signing, and I'm using the royal we as I often do, me and my ego. What are your thoughts on what Ataba Rubin is going to bring to the table? And were you a little disappointed to see him inactive on Sunday against the Patriots?
Yeah, and I actually have been calling him Ataba too, so that's good. You know me and mispronunciations. I did Dimitrov wrong for years. But I really, you know, I think he's going to be a force for good for this defense. I think that the Falcons coming into the year did not anticipate that they were going to be without Courtney Upshaw for such a long chunk of time. They did not anticipate that they'd be without Rashid Higman whatsoever. And you know, Joe Villano is fairly good for what he is, but he is not a run stopper. And really, he's stretched to play more than a handful of snaps a game. And I think what Rubin really gives you is that run-stopping force. You know he's effective in that regard. You know, he's just a big body out there who has good instincts and can spell, I think, Dontari Poe and Grady Jarrett for, you know, 10 to 20 to maybe 30 snaps a game if he needs to, give those guys a chance to get their win back a little bit, which hasn't really happened so far this year. And provide better run defense than maybe either of them. Probably not Jarrett, to be fair, but certainly Poe, who has been kind of up and down in that regard, in my eyes. So I think he's a great signing. I think that with the benefit of hindsight, given how the Patriots sort of just kept picking up big chunks of yardage with their ground game, it probably would have been nice to have Rubin out there against them. So I think that they thought that either he wasn't quite ready to contribute or they didn't have to worry as much about the run where they'd need him. But I think it turned out that they did and they could have used him. And I certainly think in the weeks ahead, when you have the Jets and the Panthers and the Cowboys and so forth, all teams that should be able to run the ball effectively, he's going to be a key player to have out there. I think that I sort of wish that they had been able to get him in the first place way back at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I think big move for them 6 weeks ago. I like Rubin. I think he'll help out. I don't expect suddenly the Falcons run defense is going to suddenly, you know, make a huge jump up the charts. I know they're like 29th in DVOA or something like that against the run. They gave up 162 yards against the Patriots. You know, I personally think some of their issues against the run is more about linebacker play than D tackle. But I certainly think the point I would 100% agree with you on is I do think having him there as a rotational piece is going to be huge to help maybe get more out of Poe, get more out of Jarrett. You know, they've been sort of using Jarrett more and more, it seems like, as a pass rusher more so than asking him to be an every down run defender. And so instances where you can get Ruben out there on those rundowns, and instances where you can sort of mix and match and sort of put him out there beside Jarrett and give Poe some rest, because at this rate it does seem like they're overworking Poe. And that was one of those things that we talked about heading into the season, where the Falcons would fix that the Chiefs didn't do, and the Chiefs wore him down a little bit too much by overtaxing him and asking him to play too many snaps. And I think that was something, given the injuries that the Falcons have had and the suspensions of Hageman, that was something that the Falcons were getting a little bit too much of, and why they had to sort of rely on a guy like Villano to play a lot more snaps these recent weeks. So I think Ruben definitely will help there. We'll see if he can sort of help solidify that front and sort of help free up those linebackers to be a little bit more effective coming downhill against the run. But I certainly agree with you. I think it's a good move. I think it's a smart move. And, you know, even though I wish they could have made it 6 weeks ago, certainly the fact that they've made it now, as we come against some of these teams that, you're right, are definitely going to be a lot more committed to running the football, certainly is putting the team in a better position than they would be without him. All right, Dave, any other thoughts you have on the Patriots game? Any other thoughts you have looking forward? Do you feel confident that this team can get this thing turned around? You know, going into the season, everybody looked at this Jets game, oh, that's a gimme win. Not so much anymore, but do you feel like having a team that is certainly not a juggernaut is a surprising, you know, I know a lot of people, including myself, thought, okay, this might be a team that challenges to be 0-16, but a team that certainly is vulnerable enough, or at least exploitable enough, that this team can sort of get back on track against this upcoming Sunday.
I think certainly there's a talent gap between these two teams that's significant enough that, you know, and I did say the same thing about the Dolphins, so take it with that grain of salt, but it's significant enough that the Falcons, yeah, if they really can do the things that we just discussed that they need to do, because we clearly know, you know, they can get back on track against the Jets. I think the Jets have played some good football over the last few weeks. They've surprised me. But this is a team that has a small handful of really good players and a lot of guys who are trying really hard to get to good. And so for the Falcons, if you can actually execute your game plan the way you want to and avoid the mistakes that have really defined the season, this is exactly the kind of game you need to get back on track. And it would be great to get back on track before you play your first divisional game against the Panthers, which could be a really defining moment.
Definitely. All right, Dave, let the people know what you have in store for them on the Falcoholic this week and in the upcoming weeks, and where people can tweet at you their anger that will at least cause you to become a little bit less frustrated with the team.
Yeah, that's a good thing for me to let them know. You know, we'll be working a lot on trying to break down what's going on with this team. I think we had some pretty compelling pieces today from different angles, including Kevin Knight taking a real look at Sark. But, you know, one of the things that I'll be writing about personally is why this team is not going to blow things up, because it's always useful, even if it's not a welcome message, to remind people that, you know, under Arthur Blank, this has not been a team that blows things up midway through the season or at the first sign of trouble. And so I'm going to keep beating that drum regardless of the consequences of it. And, you know, if you don't like that, you can certainly follow me on The Falcoholic on Twitter and let me know that you don't like that, because, you know, you do that anyways.
Definitely. All right, Dave, appreciate it. Hopefully maybe we'll get you on this season after a win, so we can celebrate a little bit, as opposed to the last couple of times I've had you on after losses. So I will try to make that promise to you.
I appreciate that. That'd be a nice change of pace.
Yeah. Thanks again, Dave. Look forward to talking with you all season long. I'm sure we will have many conversations about this team moving forward.
Absolutely. Take it easy. Thanks, man.
All right, man. You have a good night.
You too.
All right, guys, that's it. Yeah. you know, there's a lot more we could say. We could spend hours breaking down this game. I'm trying to get the show back on these less than these hour long episodes. We've been dragged. Like, I don't think I've had a 22 minute episode in a long, long time, under 30 minutes. So I'm trying to get, you know, shorter shows, get to the points, not drag these things out as much as possible. And having guests on like Dave, where you know he's going to know what he's talking about, you know, allows you to hit some of these points. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. You know, we will continue to break down this game on tomorrow's episode when we watch the All-22. And if you have questions, comments, if you know, that you want me to check out on film, you can send those questions to the show's Twitter handle at Locked On Falcons. You can send them to myself at FalcFans. Just let me know. It's for the podcast as opposed to a general thought. If you don't like the character limits of Twitter, then you can use LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. That's the email address. You can also hit us up on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. I've already got a couple of questions about this game that were very long worded, and it'll be fun reading those. It'll probably take up half the show on tomorrow's episode. But yeah, you can also check us out on FalcFans. That's where the show is posted daily. And yeah, that's it, guys. We'll be back more to talk about this game. We'll pivot to the Jets game. Come on Thursday. We'll have a fan Friday. On Friday, talking to a fan, and I'm sure they will have more thoughts on this Patriots game. So we will have plenty of opportunities to explore what's wrong with the Falcons and how we fix it. You know, try to be a little bit constructive. And certainly after I watch the film, you know, I will have a little bit more thoughts on some of the things that are working for the team and some of the things that are not. But at least, you know, I'll leave you guys off at this point. You know, I think play calling is a big issue. I certainly understand why people are being highly critical of the play calling, but it's also, to me, not just about the play calling, where you get instances like we had in the Patriots game where, you know, it's first and 10 and we throw a pass to Tevin Coleman, he drops it. And then on second and 10, Wes Schweitzer gives up a sack to some off defensive tackle I've never heard of, Adam Butler. And then, you know, you're on the third and 20 and all of a sudden, you know, so it is, play calling is a big part of it, probably the majority of it, certainly the number one issue I think that's facing the team. But there's also these issues with execution. And so, you know, that will be something we'll probably talk about on tomorrow's episode. So keep that in mind. And hopefully the Falcons get a fix. Hopefully Dave's right and, you know, they can get back on track against this Jets team. I thought they would get back on track against the Patriots. Thought they would get back on track against the Dolphins. But we'll see how it goes, man. You know, like, they can't go 0-4 in the AFC East, can they? Really? I mean, 1-3 is bad enough, but 0-4, whew. Wow. All right, guys, that's it. Rise up in brotherhood. Stay locked on.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.